appointments for Katrin and how did it happen. Now, there is these stories that go around about what happened and why, etc., which are virtually untrue, almost in totality. But it was interesting because Mr. Armstrong and I had argued for a couple, 3 years about whether or not he could appoint a successor. And it was a valid question. And I told Mr. Armstrong, I said, well, if God tells you who you should appoint, then I think yes. But if he doesn't tell you who to appoint, then I don't think he can. And he'd kind of look at that, and we didn't see Elijah's chariot coming down, the mantle falling off it or anything, so there was nothing really openly obvious to anyone who or what should be done. And so Mr. Armstrong and I would basically end the discussion that way with a kind of stalemate of, well, I don't know what happens. And I said, Mr. Armstrong, God keep you alive if he wants to. And if he doesn't, he'll sort it out whatever way. And that went on for a time until he finally, about the last 6 months of his life, he became ill. And he had been ill for a long time. We didn't really know it. His blood count had been going down. He'd quit producing red blood cells, at least to the extent that he was losing more than he was gaining. In fact, the doctors were amazed because in the last couple of months of his life, he was operating at a level of red blood cells where most people would be unconscious. And we were still writing and working, which was funny because Dr. Martin, the old gentleman, he was an older doctor, really nice guy. You can be young in your 70s because he was still racing cars. That was his side job for a medical doctor, to race sports cars. But he had a few joints missing that he'd replaced with Teflon and other things. But he was quite a nice guy, and we enjoyed working with him. But he was amazed at Mr. Armstrong's clarity of thought and what he could do every time he'd come up there and sit with him and watch the telecast or do whatever as he came for medical visits. But it was fascinating for Mr. Armstrong for him to see that. Well, his blood count was real low and had been dropping for some time, and part of that was his weakness. Part of his angina pain he thought he had was actually a low blood count. There's various things in there. And, of course, we had 20,000 home remedies from all the members in the church telling us what he could do, and I became the guinea pig for most of those remedies. And some of those things do make you feel different. You know, I had bees pollen from the Arctic Circle, and I had all sorts of funny things that. And as long as it was natural, it came from plants or something like that, I wouldn't mind taking it. Some of the things that they had sent, I wouldn't take. But because I knew better than that, because you could die with some medication. So you try to pay attention as best you can to what's there. And I always tell Mr. Armstrong, I'm sure this stuff works for someone. And I've always been an advocate, if you're short something in your diet, then if you take that, you'll feel better. And obviously what somebody sent in, I'm sure helped them. But if it isn't what you need, then it's not going to help you. If it is, it might. And so I never criticize anyone for their home remedies. And I've always told my wife, if you tell people what you do, just say, hey, this is what I do, try it. If it doesn't work for you, fine. You know, what you don't ever do is call people up and say, how did it work? Because then if it didn't work for them, they got to say, well, it didn't work. And then they feel bad. And then it's almost like you lied to me about this stuff. And everybody doesn't like that type of thing. So you never ask people how something works when you give them a home remedy. And you tell them to go on to the next person and search out what you need. So we had a bunch of these when Mr. Armstrong was very ill. But I always appreciated how much work he kept doing. But those last 6 months, as he got ill, he realized that he needed to appoint someone. He felt the Council of Elders would have difficulty in choosing someone, that there would be lobbying by certain individuals for certain positions, and there would be a mix and a lot of trouble. So he felt he had to appoint someone. And so he began looking at all the different people around him, and he would pick somebody. And then they'd do something that he'd think wasn't right, and then he'd change his mind, and he'd pick somebody else. Then they'd do something, and he thought, no, they can't be it, and he'd pick somebody else. Now, Mr. DeCotch was only in the hat because he was over church administration. Otherwise, Mr. Armstrong realized he wasn't a very polished man. He was a kind man in a lot of ways. He liked people. And it was legendary what he did with some of the widows and people in Pasadena, and he served in those areas, and to his credit, in that area, he was very good. And so he was in the hat because church administration, he said the church is the parent organization. So Mr. DeCotch was in the hat, but that didn't mean he was first choice or primary choice or the only choice. He wasn't trained for years and years and years like some people want to try to make it look out. Only generically, in the sense that all of you were trained by him and that you had the booklets too. You could read them. You got baptized, and we're all part of the fruits of his labor, pretty much. And so generically, you could say that you were trained. But But Mr. Koch asked me to give a sermon about his training and stuff once. And I said, Mr. Koch, I can't go up there and say that. That's a lie. Because it didn't happen that way. And I said, I'd be a fool to try to even say it because the last guest that he had on the campus there, Queen Circuit, and you all saw pictures of it and knew about it, those of you who have been in the church for a number of years, realized that he had Queen Circuit come. Now, Mr. Koch, of course, he never traveled with us overseas, which if you're training someone, you'd think you'd take him overseas. Here we had Queen Circuit come to Pasadena, who was the most prominent guest in some respects, although Mrs. Reagan came there for a talk at one time, but Queen Circuit came there on an official visit, which was the State Department had to approve and go through the facilities and check them out and the FBI searches and all this. A lot involved with it, which I won't go into here because it's irrelevant to this story. But it was fascinating that we had all these special functions there. Mr. Koch was not invited to any of them because it wasn't his job function. Now, I told Mr. Koch, I said, if you were being trained for all these years, then why weren't you invited to these things 9 months before he died? Because he didn't know. So I said, I can't say that. But at the same time, I can say God did appoint you in the sense that you were the one appointed when he died. Because Mr. Koch was not the one that was on the list about 2 or 3 months before he died. Mr. Armstrong had a stroke, which wasn't publicized. Most of you don't know about. And I thought he was going to die then. If he had died then, it would have been somebody else. It wouldn't have been Mr. Koch. So what happened then is I began to realize at this point in my life that God was going to pick someone that he wanted for whatever reason. And again, we always thought we'd go on higher and mightier and greater and grow, etc. Things don't go the way we plan. But I began to realize that God was going to appoint someone based on what he wanted to happen. And so it came around to Mr. DeCotta's turn, and Mr. Armstrong died during that appointment. Now, he had talked to a number of people, some of the men sitting in this room he had talked to, about Mr. DeCotta and about others and who you should name, and most of them were like me. I'm not going to tell you who you should name because I don't know. Mr. Keller didn't know. Mr. Walker didn't know. None of us knew. And who are we to say who God wants? Unless somebody, God tells us. God didn't tell me. Did he tell you? Tell you? No, didn't tell any of us. And so it happened that way. Now, why did God do this? It was interesting. One of the things on Mr. Armstrong's mind, more than anything else, at the very end of his life, in the commission that he gave Mr. Koch, because the church was the parent organization, when I say the church, there is a true church. And I want to make that clear what I mean by that, in the sense that Mr. Helge knows this very well, because every time Mr. Helge would talk about the Worldwide Church of God, Mr. Armstrong would pound his fist on the table. And the Worldwide Church of God, Inc. is not the church. The Worldwide Church of God, Incorporation is a corporation made up of 7 board members. The church is the spiritual organism. Get that straight. So Mr. Helge would get it straight that time and say it again later and get it straight again. And again and again. And that's what I mean by the church. It's the spiritual organism, those whom God has called, those whom God has given his spirit to, those who God is working with. And it is not a corporation. It operates under a corporation or under several corporations at different times, but it is comprised of people. The people are the church, and God knows who they are. And the people are scattered and have been scattered. More recently, just as they were scattered in the first century, they've been scattered at different times for God's purpose. Everything that's happened, God is in control of. I've not lost any faith in God over any of the things that have happened in the body known as his church. Because God has been in charge the whole time. And he's done this because, frankly, when I look at it now, there was a complacency we had 10 years ago, 12 years ago. We all knew what the truth was. We knew the Sabbath day, we knew the holy days, we knew the plan of God, we knew the basic things, the new booklet would come out, we'd kind of read it, oh yeah, I know that. How many of you now have gone back through and can really prove why you are here today? As opposed to 10 years ago when maybe you proved it when you first came to the church, or maybe you proved something else and then you read that real, you know, kind of quickly, the other parts of it. And I noticed a lot of people left when it became what they proved, became the thing that got changed, then all of a sudden now this has to be wrong, but the thing I didn't prove wasn't the big thing. So each of us hit our wall in a different booklet, in a different way, with a different proof, whether it was the Trinity or born again or Sabbath or whatever it was. And our tolerance levels of being able to sit through it are different. And some people finally couldn't take it. And I came to the point a few years ago, and this is my first sermon now in about 3 years, because I chose not to speak a couple years ago because I said I cannot endorse what's being said, and I won't do so by coming up to the pulpit and have people, yes, you can give service sermons. I can give a sermon in the Baptist church that would be fine. But I'm not going to go there and and look like I'm endorsing what's being said from other people because I don't agree with it. So that's why I quit giving sermons then. But it was a matter of looking at what was being said and understanding that the church is a spiritual organism and that God does what he does for his purpose. And Mr. Armstrong's concern, as I said, was that the bride make herself ready. Because when you go to Revelation 19, about verse 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, it talks about the bride being ready. And Mr. Armstrong knew that Christ was going to come fairly soon. He thought it was going to come in his lifetime. He lived his life that way. The last few months he realized, and he'd tell me, he said, you know, I thought I'd be alive when Christ returned. Obviously, God's time frame is not the same as ours. And so I'm going to die. And Christ is still going to come. And every body of God over the centuries has realized that without a sense of urgency, you don't do as much. Oh, I'll put it off to later. I'll put it off later. I don't think the apostles of the early church would have been quite as dynamic if they knew Christ wasn't coming for 2,000 years back again. Most of us need some kind of a prompt, an urge to make us think that. Something that we have with Mr. Armstrong, because we kind of felt, well, if he was alive when Christ returned, then that means it's got to be soon, because he's an old man. And therefore, he'll die soon if he doesn't come pretty soon, so it makes it easier for us to think, hey, we better get our act together. And you get a younger man, you think, uh-oh, we may get more time. You start thinking of things more in a materialistic nature, and it makes it a little more awkward. So we got a complacency, I feel, that was in the church, that we kind of let our guard down a little bit. And we were taught government. And Satan knows what he's doing. He knows when to step in. He knows when to say things, when to do things, what to do, and how to do it. He's much smarter than we are. None of us can go up against him without God's help. Christ didn't go up against him without God's help in the sense that he fasted and prayed, and he had, was full of God's Spirit, obviously. And if that's what he did to get ready for the test of Satan, what are we supposed to do? Well, you may as well just shoot yourself because you're not going to win if God's not helping you. But yeah, God does help us. He promises that. And Satan's been very masterful in the way he did what he did, unfortunately, for us. But fortunately, in some way, you know, you can't really say that, because if God's behind something that's purifying you, that's making you better than you were before, how can you say unfortunately in that sense? It's painful. It's very painful when something like that happens. It's very painful when you're lied to. Very painful when you hear things that you don't want to believe. I've told some people privately that it's difficult in the sense that we were taught government. We were taught this is the true church of God. We're taught to be obedient. You know, we're told about Korah, but then they're also told about Phinehas. You know, when's the difference? When are you supposed to be Korah and you're rebellious, and when are you being Phinehas and you stop the plague? Difficult to see the fine line between some of these things when you see things going wrong. With me, I thought about saying things early on, more publicly, but read with Elijah. Mr. Hay, we had a sermon on Elijah a week ago, in the sense that when Elijah, when Rehoboam was going to attack Jeroboam, and Elijah called and told him, he said, look, this is of God. Don't do it. And I could see back in 1986 that this was of God. And if there's really nothing you can do, and if you try to stand up and do something on your own, then you're shot down. One of the things I saw in our past with different people that had different problems at various times wasn't because their motivation was wrong. Wasn't necessarily because the facts were wrong. Most of the time, because the timing was wrong. And it's very, very hard to know when and what you're supposed to do. And you get put in situations where
beings and righteous in the Sabbath, which is a clock around the earth anyway, things may be a different matter, because at that time, if you are a spirit being, you will be perpetually righteous, so really all days will be a Sabbath in that sense. But when you ask people that, and they try to say, well, the answer, well, the Sabbath is made for man, but the men that God gave that to were Israel. Well, that's not what Christ said. Christ was very specific on what he said. And of course, creation in the Ten Commandments refers back to, or the Sabbath in the Ten Commandments refers back to creation. For in 6 days God made heaven and earth, and sea and all in them is, and the seventh day he rested. Therefore, God blessed and hallowed. You've been through this. You've proved it for yourselves over the last couple of years to see what it says. And I'm no different from you. I've gone back through those things I'd proved before. And I'm amazed the number of papers that people have written. And I got one a couple, 3 months ago of 102 pages from someone who disagrees with the position that any day is fine. And I'm astonished at how much research some of you in here and others scattered around the world have written. Some have written to me because they want to see what I think of it. Others have written to me because I'm still on the CC mail list and they assume I'm still a minister and agree with all the things that the Worldwide Church believes, which I write back to and tell them, well, wonderful research. Did a good job. Keep going. You know, not much I can say about it. And there has been some very good research done by a number of people, because it's pretty clear, and there are things that you can't answer any other way, and as far as those topics. But I didn't think anyone would quit doing some of these things when Mr. Armstrong died. I didn't see how half the church would follow away, how there'd be a great falling away, how apostasy could set in. I didn't see that. But I know that God, again, is in charge, and he lets Satan do certain things, but he stops it. He knows who his people are. Christ is our lead shepherd. We're taken care of. But again, it's not always fun and not always easy. But Mr. Armstrong's thought was the purification of the bride. And I firmly in my heart believe that that is exactly what is taking place right now, is the purification. Because you cannot purify a group. You've got to purify individuals. And each of us individually has to be tested. Each of us individually has to say, this is what I believe. Each of us individually has to say, this is what I am willing to die for. And when you decide what you're willing to die for, God knows where you stand. And it takes patience and it takes faith. Abraham did not, when God called him, he said, you're going to have a multitude of nations. What did he get? One son. How many years? 25 years later after he's told? That's a long time to wait. He's 100 years old. Doesn't make much sense. Abraham tried to do it his own way. At one point there with Sarah's help and Hagar. No, it was not God was going to do it. God does it his way. Finally gives him a son, then he tells him to offer him up as an offering. Now this wasn't a 10-minute decision where God says, hey, offer your son. Okay, here's the altar over here. Put some thing on it. Here, Isaac, I'm going to, you know. This was something we had to think about. He was told to do it. He had to set aside for a trip. He had to walk with his son and his staff up to the mountain. This took some time. Most things take time. And most things take some bitterness in the sense that you have to think about it. And you have to wonder, why? And what? Why did you do this, God? You're in control. Why did you appoint someone who would let others change the doctrines of the church? Difficult to see when you're going through pain. But at the same time, not so difficult when you realize that God is purifying you. He's testing you. You're the A students. And there's others out there as well, but you made it through. Mr. Armstrong asked me a few times when he would get mad at me about something or another, of something he thought I did. Well, if I knew if you had to do it again, you'd do it differently. He had never asked me if I would do it differently, because I think he was afraid of the answer I'd give him, because the answer I would give him would be, no, I wouldn't. Because if I'd have done it differently, in most instances, I probably wouldn't be here. Because if I'd have done it differently, it'd probably been because I was trying to do it myself. There were things that were done wrong by different people. And yet some of those people had power and position. And if you said anything, you wouldn't be there. You'd be terminated. You'd be fired. You might be disfellowshipped, depending on what the situation was. None really of your own doing, except for the fact that you stood up and tried to say something when it wasn't the right time and it wasn't the right place, and you didn't have the patience to wait for it. And that's not necessarily a black mark, because none of us had that much patience. Who does? Job had to talk about the patience of Job, yet he didn't want to go through that. He was a bit impatient at times too. Abraham was patient, yet he tried to do it his own way. Elijah, God, he calls down fire from heaven. God does it, and he runs out in the desert and wants to die. All the people of God have faced these things. Peter, I'll not leave you, Lord. When Christ is standing there, he's going to defend him. He grabs his sword and cuts off the guy's ear and wants to fight, and Christ says, no, wrong way to do it. Christ is getting crucified. Peter runs away. Things like that happen. All of us face those things. It doesn't make you a bad person. There's prices and pain you suffer because of those things that happen to you. And if you bring them on yourself, maybe you can learn from it, and maybe you wish you hadn't done it the same way in that sense. But there were times when, no, if I'd have done things a little bit differently in certain aspects, I wouldn't be here, because it's not the way that God intended for it to happen. But it's a matter of believing in God, trusting Him, understanding what was supposed to happen, understanding why things did happen. Richard Koch, when he finally was, decided he was going to be the one. Of course, if Mr. Armstrong lived, that could have changed, because Mr. Armstrong did change his mind several times. But it began to be apparent toward the end, and so Mr. Koch, who came out to his house in the evening and spent some time there, didn't spend as much time as might be believed at his house. And I know that because I was there almost all the time.
I basically went home for about an hour a day to change clothes. I spent the night there as well most of the time, with a couple of exceptions. One being the night when my wife must have gotten pregnant for my son, because I'm sure she had to do that while I was home. But other than that, I was pretty much with him and knew everything that was going on, what was said, what was done, and there are those in this room as well as others outside who can vouch for that. And although once Mr. Dukach told me, Mr. Dukach, I get pretty tired. I said, every time you quote Mr. Armstrong on the pulpit and you misquote him, it's very difficult for me to, when people come up and ask me, did Mr. Armstrong say that? Did he do this, do that? I said, I'm not going to lie. And I said, it makes it very difficult for me to say. He said, why don't you just tell him you weren't there? I said, that's a joke. I wasn't there. I said, I can't say that. But, again, you've got to live and die by what you do and what you say, what you believe. And when I was there, I know what happened. I know what was said. And I know the promises were made. I know what Mr. Armstrong expected of Mr. Dukach. I know what Mr. Dukach told Mr. Armstrong he would do and what he wouldn't do. I know that Mr. Armstrong told him not to bring his staff up with him when he went to the office. And the reason I know that is because Mr. Armstrong told me I had to take the job as his assistant. And I told Mr. Armstrong I did not want that job. I did not want it for him. I did not want it for Mr. Dukach. And I said, Mr. Dukach has his own staff. Mr. Armstrong said his staff is causing problems. His staff is not coming to the job. He is. The Council of Elders will be there to help him. And you need to be there to help him do all the functions that have been done for the last few years. You're the only one that knows because you're the only one that traveled. And I said, Mr. Dukach, if you make me do it, I will do it. But I don't want to. He said, well, you'll have to. So that was one of the promises that was made. And it was difficult because when you look at what's happened, what I see is Mr. Armstrong was very correct in his what was going to happen and where the problems would come from. Unfortunate, but the catchwords of the day after Mr. Armstrong died was, well, Mr. Armstrong is Mr. Armstrong, and you have to answer to God, not Mr. Armstrong. And so, well, yes, I have to answer to God, not Mr. Armstrong, so therefore I can do anything I want. And so therefore things changed. A lot of things changed. Some slowly, some quickly. But it was difficult. But what do you say? What do you do? Well, I went and talked to Mr. Dukach. I said, frankly, I was happier. I was still his aide. I was one of many now for a few months, and then finally got weeded away. And frankly, I ended up exactly where I wanted to be. I wanted to be with my wife. I had missed some of that in marriage, and so I wanted to be with her. I wanted to have kids. And when Michelle got pregnant, I knew that Mr. Ashton was going to die because we had been trying not to have children all the way through, and we were still trying then. So I'm not really sure exactly how she got pregnant. I do know how she got pregnant, but I'm not sure how she got pregnant. But it was one of those things that I should have recognized then that he was going to die and that it was just a matter of time. And God gave us something to replace him because he had been the center of our life for a number of years. And my wife's as well, because the last 5 years of his life, my wife flew, which was good because she didn't fly the first 7 years, and she thought she was missing something, and it was real glamorous until she took her first trip and told me she was going to quit. And I said, well, you tell Mr. Armstrong I'm not. So she didn't, and so she kept flying. But she said, this is work. I said, yeah, it always has been. And surprise, surprise. You know, sitting around, spending 21-hour days, and most of my days are 20, 21 hours long when I worked for him, which was no piece of cake in itself. And so Michelle got to find out that. And it was better traveling with her. At least she knew what I was doing. And took some of the glamour out of it. It gave her an education, gave her a basis to understand what was happening. Gave her a lot of witness to what was going on in the work at that time, to what Mr. Armstrong did say and do at various places and functions. And the leaders he talked to, what his message was of the gospel of the kingdom of God. And there wasn't anybody in the church, I think, during his lifetime that didn't know the mission of the church was to preach the gospel of the kingdom of God, which is the soon coming return of Jesus Christ to this earth and the setting up of the millennial reign and finally being spirit beings and into the God family. I think all of us would have known that very clearly and succinctly as what it was and what he did and what he said. However, there are those who wish to distort what he said and what he did and what he left out. And I read one of them in the latest co-worker letter from a different church, which said that he was basically, our mission at that time was to go around and preach that the beast was going to rise in Europe and attack the U.S. Well, I would hardly call that the mission of the church or what was said or what the gospel was, but there are those who say those things and write them
In fact, I have the letter in my pocket. I could read it to you because it just came out. And that wasn't what was said. So for my wife, that was a good thing for her to understand and to see as well, to be an eyewitness to what did happen when we were traveling and how the work progressed. And so there's a painting of things now that come differently, a rewriting of our history, which you're all aware of. But some of it can shake your faith. Like Mr. Haber talks about, people say things and about certain incidents and things, and they may even produce documents that they show that say, quote-unquote, that are put, meanings put on them, which, in fact, are perhaps true documents, but yet not what they were intended for, or not in the way they were intended. So you have to be careful of that. What was done overseas, Mr. Armstrong, yeah, he stayed in the best hotels that we could, although it wasn't always the best hotel in the country, because sometimes the government put us up. And it was interesting to know that Mr. Armstrong, to me, was a man of God in the sense that he knew that God was going to do what he needed to be done. Sometimes he was weak and that he would be nervous. Although if you told him he was nervous, he'd get mad at you. So I never told him he was nervous when he was nervous. But I would just kind of try to relax around him or pretend that everything was just wonderful and fine, even though I was nervous too, because I had no idea what was going on half the time. In fact, he'd ask me, is the meeting set up? We're going to meet this person. I'd say, sure, God wants it's going to happen. And I had no idea because I didn't have confirmations yet. I didn't buy any meetings. Those stories go around. There were meetings bought in the past, yes. There were things like that that were done. Mr. Armstrong didn't know about it. I told him about some of them. Then he got very frustrated. He said, well, why? I said, well, there are people around you who wanted to aggrandize themselves, who didn't want to admit that that they what they were saying wasn't accurate. And so they did things a certain way. In fact, he almost quit traveling in 1981 when he found out some of the things. Because if that's the way it was done, I'm not going to do it. I said, Mr. Armstrong, for one thing, it wasn't the way it was done all the time. Because I had sat at one of the meetings, and because there were so few of us, even as a crew member, I sat in on some of the tables and hosted several ambassadors at one meeting in China. And it was interesting, this particular meeting, that the ambassador from Zambia was there. And before, while we're eating dinner, and it was a Peking duck dinner, the specialty, in which you ate everything, including the brains of the duck and everything else, and I think you sat on the feathers, although some of the food tastes like maybe you're eating those too. But the Zambian ambassador had been raised by missionaries, and he was telling me how he hated the Christian missionaries who were down there and all the things they did wrong and all this stuff, and the Western religions are so bad and all this stuff like that. And then after he'd finished saying that, he said, what's Mr. Armstrong going to talk about? He's a minister, isn't he? Well, yes. He's going to talk about peace and the world government and, well, I don't know about this stuff. So we had finished the meal. Mr. Armstrong got to talk. Talked for about an hour. Talked about the kingdom of God that was coming, that God was going to bring peace to mankind. And we should try to do what we do now, but we wouldn't solve this world's problems. And talked about the way of give and get, some of the standard things and some of the things you've seen on films in the past. But it was interesting that he, after Mr. Armstrong finished speaking, the ambassador leaned across the table to me, and he said, I want Mr. Armstrong to visit my country. That's what they need. Yeah, okay. So I told Mr. Armstrong about that on a number of other occasions, and he said, well, good, I'm glad, you know. But he knew God works in different ways. He used the comment several times that God used Balaam's ass. He can use so-and-so now. He used different names, and I probably fit in that even a few times. But so he knew that would happen. But he said, we're not going to do any more, and we didn't buy any meetings after that at all, period. I said, Mr. Armstrong, if God wants you to see him, you'll see him. If he doesn't, you won't. It's not in my control. I said, I'll do the work. I'll call. I'll make the arrangements. I'll set things up. And but I said, don't blame me if it doesn't happen. It's not my problem. Now, he would. I knew. I'd probably get chewed out. But that was part of it, part of his nervousness, too. And so we'd go on trips. And whereas in the 70s, we'd go on a six-week trip, maybe visit three countries. When I did the scheduling in the 80s, having been away from my wife, I tried to keep the crew at home as much as possible, and I'd usually schedule 2- and 3-week trips. Our last trip, we did 9 countries in 24 days. Now, for someone who is, at that time, 92 years old, 91 years old, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for me, and I was only 32. And so, and the problem we had with his heart condition, you couldn't see anybody in the morning, and you couldn't see anybody at night. So basically, you call up the prime minister's office and say, hey, we need to come visit between 1 and 5 o'clock on Thursday. You know, I tell people what I was doing. We're setting up meetings with the other crew members and other people. I remember talking with the chairman of Union Oil, who visits from different countries for the other charity. And these people would say, how do you do that? We have to give them a month and kind of wait till they tell us. And I said, oh, we've gone around the world on 2 hours' notice. We flew into Syria, or overflew Syria, the day after another private jet got forced down. We took off without permits. We got our permits while we were in the air. The other plane that got forced down had a permit. So, you know, we flew down the Red Sea with MiGs on one side and Phantoms on the other during the war. I mean, we did a lot of stupid things. But it was just a matter of God wants you to do it, you do it, and it works. And if he doesn't want you to do it, it doesn't work. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't do your part, because when you're asked to do something that's your part, you do it, and you sometimes cry over it, and you sometimes think, why? And you think, God, I need some sleep once in a while. But yeah, I didn't get that tired even though I was up 20 hours.